This is Festival Showcase, a weekly interview program that explores the music and the artists behind the 2016 season of the Aspen Music Festival in School and previews upcoming performances. I'm Chris Moore. This program comes to you from Aspen Public Radio, the official voice of the Aspen Music Festival in School, and can be heard online at aspenpublicradio.org. Funding for Festival Showcase is provided by the Barnard Fane Foundation. Today I'll chat with guitarist Sharon Isbin, whose concert is coming up this Saturday, and cantor Roland Simmons, who's putting on a very special program this evening at 5. This Saturday, August 6th, guitarist Sharon Isbin performs at Harris Hall with her former guitar student and current colleague Colin Davin, as well as the Pacifica Quartet. Her guitar students perform August 11th at 5 at the Anderson Ranch and August 18th at 6 in Scanlon Hall at the Buxbaum campus. Here's a conversation we had recently. Well, Sharon, I wanted to get right into your concert on August 6th. I'm very excited about it. You have the Pacifica Quartet, which rose to the ranks, I guess you might say, here at the Aspen Music Festival. You have a very good former student who has now become a friend and colleague.
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about who you're playing with and then a little bit about the pieces that people can expect to hear.
Everything on the program is Mediterranean Latin inspired. Mm-hmm. It opens with Vivaldi, and it's one of his lute chamber works, which has been reset by Emilio Pujol for a guitar concerto, where three of the strings from Pacifica will join me. Mm-hmm. And the guitar has a chance to improvise some of the embellishment in the slow movement. It's really a beautiful, beautiful piece and a lot of fun to play. And that'll be followed by a work that the Chinese composer Tan Dun wrote for me. He's best known for his Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon film score. And this is a work called Seven Desires for Guitar. And it's inspired by the ancient Chinese lute or pipa, and then the heritage of the Spanish guitar, which goes back to flamenco gestures. So you combine these two cultures together in a fascinating mix because they each share a lot. You've got the tremolo in both flamenco and Spanish guitar and in pipa. They do it in a different direction than we do in terms of which way they move their fingers. We have bent notes. They have bent notes that are ghostly and evocative. So it combines elements of Chinese folk music with the Spanish flamenco tradition. And it's a really great piece that I've enjoyed playing everywhere. It's inspired by the concerto he wrote for me as well called Yi Tu. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to end the first half with the Pacifica Quartet playing a work of Boccherini that has a rollicking fandango at the end. Of course, that's in your Spanish tradition, yes. Uh-huh. And Jonathan Haas is going to join us on castanet, so it'll be a lot of fun.
That's great.
So it'll get everybody hopping. And then on the second half, I've also invited my former student and now colleague, Colin Davin, who is on the faculty of the Cleveland Institute of Music, and he'd been my fellowship teaching assistant here for a number of years in Aspen and has performed a lot and is known very much by the community. So he'll be joining me in duets that come from South America and Spain. You might say, now, how Howard Shore fit into that? Well, these are duets that he wrote for me for the film score of The Departed, Martin Scorsese's Oscar-winning film, and it's all inspired by the tango. So we've got that wonderful mix. Music by Manuel de Falla, La Vida Breve. We've got Granados, one of his beautiful dances, Oriental, Aporro, and of course Rodrigo. He wrote Concierto de Aranjuez, and from that his wife penned lyrics to a song called Aranjuez Ma Pensée, and Rodrigo completed that in a 6-minute version of the concerto. So we're going to do a 2-guitar version of that.
One thing that I think is the key to why audiences love you so much is that you bring not just pure classical music into your approach, but also folk music, ethnic music, a lot of other things. And you managed to do it successfully. I wonder how you are able to do that with a certain level of consistency where it seems like one experiment after another, by the time it makes it onto a CD, it works beautifully.
Well, I think I'm really drawn to artists that I admire and whose work is really extraordinary, and music that will make a fit for us. So if I'm combining forces with somebody like Steve Vai, or last year we had Stanley Jordan here for Guitar Passions and Romero Lubambo, it's really important to pick music that gives them a chance to do their thing, which keeps me in my element as well. So that creates a new kind of hybrid that's very special.
Is there something that you can say generally about what brings together very different styles and very different approaches in such a way that the ear says, wow, there is something there that they have in common or something.
You really have to understand the music. You have to understand all the styles. And in my case, since I'm the one picking the music or picking the arrangements or the people who will make them, I have to really have a good instinct about what will work and not do it for any commercial purpose at all. Mm-hmm. It has to be really organic from within and have integrity and really an understanding and knowledge of the players and the styles and have a vision ahead of time.
Aspen Public Radio has a stack of your CDs here, and I'm looking at it, and it's higher than just about any other artist that we have here on a regular basis at the Aspen Music Festival. Is there anything else coming up? Because I know you've been doing things like with Isabel Leonard and with Stanley Jordan and everything. Are any of those turning into CDs in the near future?
Well, one of the things I'm very excited about is Isabel Leonard, who's the Argentinian-American singer that I premiered my first concert with together in a duo with her 2 years ago here in Aspen. We do an all-Spanish program, music of Garcia Lorca, Rodrigo, Manuel de Falla, Monsalvache, and others. And this is a program we just went into the studio last month and recorded, and it's going to come out sometime the beginning of 2017. So keep your eyes open for that. You can sign up at my website to get the announcement when it does happen. But as she really is quite extraordinary in doing this music, which comes from her own Spanish heritage roots.
Now, most of us know Isabel Leonard from the Met HD broadcast.
Yes.
And she sings some fantastic mezzo-soprano roles in the major operas that are on the stage there. How does she enjoy working in a much more intimate setting with a classical guitarist?
She really loves it. And what's special about all this music is that, with the exception of Rodrigo, the other four composers, including Agustín Lara, who wrote Granada, that's on our album as well, that was our encore, they were all inspired by the guitar in the music we've chosen. So even though written for keyboard or orchestra or other kinds of combinations, bringing it to the guitar, making arrangements, a lot of these arrangements that I've done and will be a first recording of them, it really brings it home. Mm-hmm. That's part of that process you asked me about. How do you make decisions about new works and making them work? It's about finding the integrity in the music. If I were to ask you, I don't know if you could answer this, when do you think the last time a major Spanish singer collaborated on an all-Spanish recording with classical guitar? How long ago do you think that was?
I'm going to really put myself out on a limb and say it hasn't happened yet.
Well, it was over 40 years ago, and it was Teresa Braganza. She was, of course, an amazing singer, and the arrangements were not so amazing. So this is really going to I believe, take the place in the literature and the heritage of something that has never happened in this way before.
One thing that always strikes me about a good Spanish music program is that sometimes it's really fiery and flashy, and other times it's almost unbearably intimate, and the pain or the yearning. Do we find both elements in the singing that we can look forward to with Isabel Leonard and you?
Very much so. And when you look at the music of Garcia Lorca, they all tell stories. And that's part of the intimacy that the audience experience, whether it's about the bullfighter going off to his death or about the young man who goes in search of a wife and instead finds his long-lost sister. These kinds of ballads have a beauty to them that is really very special. But then you've got the fiery things like Granada, and you have the Manuel de Falla. So it's really a mix.
Is Daniel Poor involved in writing songs for the two of you as well? And might that be a separate project, or what's happening with that?
Well, Richard Daniel Poor was commissioned by Carnegie Hall to compose a song cycle for us for Carnegie's 125th anniversary. And this was in collaboration with the Harris Theater in Chicago. So we premiered the Daniel Poor songs that were inspired by beautiful Rumi poetry. They're very sensuous and evocative and exotic and totally steeped in beauty. We did these in Carnegie Hall, and we had a sold-out show there in November, and then brought it to the Harris Theater in Chicago and also to the Krannert Center in Illinois. And there are certainly songs that I plan to record. My next project is really to do that and the great concerto that Dave Brubeck's son Chris wrote for me called Affinity that I premiered with Elizabeth Schulz last year with Maryland Symphony. And I'll be doing it with Leonard Slatkin and Detroit Symphony, among others, this coming season. It's a concerto that has wonderful jazz, Middle Eastern elements, and really rocks, and a beautiful ballad section that's an homage to his father that uses some music that his father had written. So it's something that will involve all music composed for me. This is another project on the pipeline.
When you have someone like Chris Brubeck come along, this is I would guess, the first time he wrote a guitar concerto. Is there a lot of texting back and forth and emailing and that sort of thing so that he can try out things and you can say that's impossible or we could do more of the here or there? How do you work together with a composer like him?
What was even better, he would just show up. And he would show up with a MIDI version of his sketched out process so that, that I could hear it and even make comments compositionally. In fact, in that process, I had him change his entire vision of the second movement from something that was nice, but really perhaps not that evocative. And I said, you know, your father died recently and then your mother. And I said, is there something about that you want to commemorate, musically speaking, artistically? Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm so glad you asked that. Yes, I would love to find something that would honor him that he had composed in a slow ballad for the middle section. So we chose that together, and it's just gorgeous. So that was a unique way of being able to interact with the composer, not only technically, how does this work on the guitar, but compositionally to make a piece that really is tailor fit.
So in a sense, you invited him deeper into his own heart and into his own life experience, which was a real gift for you to give him while he was composing this work.
And for us to then have as his gift, an expression, right, for the piece itself.
Mm-hmm. Chris's experience with losing his parents is something that's universal for all of us at some time in our lives. And I think as people go through that experience, whether they're whichever side of it they're on, this would seem to be a work that might offer some solace or some deeper understanding of that process, too.
You're absolutely right. And sometimes when you're in the middle of, certainly a world premiere, you're very focused on all the kinds of things that have to happen to get it to work on the stage before it finally does. In fact, this piece was broadcast already three times. The world premiere I did with Elizabeth Scholes and Maryland Symphony was broadcast three times on Performance Today. Mm-hmm. So people have had a chance to hear it. And the response has been great. I really do look forward to recording it. But now that I can step back and have some perspective and listen to your take on this, just the vision of that slow movement paying homage to his father who had passed, I realized that so much of what we do can have a universal way of relating to the human experience. And the same thing is true, one of the pieces that I'm doing on the program, the three songs from The Departed that Howard Shore wrote. It's really not just about the film and the Irish mafia in Boston and the guys who were killed and the loss that happened there, but it's about everybody's loss, everybody's departed. And when you think of it that way, it has so much more meaning.
Somebody was feeling that in the crazy political environment we're in and the bizarre things that happen in the world, that music may be less relevant now. I wish I could remember who it was who said this, but they said beauty is always relevant. And I feel that there is a deeper relevance to all the things that we do, all the beauty that we hear here in Aspen and that we see here in Aspen when times do seem to be so insane.
It is our refuge. It's our refuge to express both sorrow and pain and sadness and yearning, as well as exuberance and joy and happiness. All of those things can be a transformative and transcendent experience in music. And that's why those emotions, which can be very conflicted when they have no expression, become something very powerful and meaningful when attached to music, both as a listener and a performer.
Or as a composer, for that matter.
For sure, as a composer, yes.
Yes. Now, I think it was last year, Sharon, that Troubadour, your video, your hour-long video about kind of a biography of you, appeared here in Aspen in one of its first airings, and then it's been on public television. Can you tell us where it's gone from there? Is it still out there in the world being viewed by people?
Well, since you and I last spoke, certainly Colorado Public Television has broadcast it a number of times, but it's been shown now on over 200 stations across the United States, and it will continue, the broadcasts continue for a period of 4 years. So they keep popping up. For example, in Los Angeles, which is one of the major markets, it's already been broadcast 16 different times on three different networks. In fact, the most recently will be coming up next month. The film was signed just this spring to EuroArts, which is one of the most important distributors for foreign television of art films having to do with dance, music, and theater. This has already yielded results that are exciting. For example, in August, there'll be 9 broadcasts in Japan on Classic Ed Japan television network of Troubadour, and there'll be broadcasts coming up in other European countries. So there's a website dedicated to the film where you can actually see upcoming broadcasts as well as past ones. It was released on DVD and Blu-ray, and that's still available. That's on the Video Artists International label. You can access that anywhere online. It's just great to see that it has legs, and those legs are continuing.
And that goes all the way back to your childhood as a little rocket geek that you were when you were first growing up with your dad and mom and everything.
It does. Growing up in Minneapolis and mm-hmm. then moving to Italy when I was 9 years old and studying the guitar there. That's where I first began with somebody mm-hmm. who was a student of Segovia's and was touring all over Italy. Mm-hmm. And then coming back to the Twin Cities, continuing and doing the competition circuit, then starting to tour in Europe when I was 17. But what the film really is, I think, very special about is not only the personal side of things, and there's a lot of that, but also working with composers. And you can actually, as a viewer, see what that dynamic is like, mm-hmm. as if you're just hidden in a corner of a room watching this unfold. Mm-hmm. And the exchange of how you reach agreements and understandings about what the composer has as their vision and how to create that on the instrument. It's something quite unusual. So John Coriano is in there in that role, as well as Tan Dunn, Joan Tower, Chris Rouse. It's a really great exponent for artists collaborating with composers. There are also guests from Martina Navratilova, who's well known here to mm-hmm. Aspen audiences. There's a lovely session where I'm playing on a bench and her interview is interspersed with that. Her little niece is visiting. And she talks about the discipline of tennis and music and how similar that kind of thing is, much more eloquently than I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. And Joan Baez is in the film, Mark O'Connor, even Michelle Obama, who gave a stunning speech at the Democratic Convention. And she is there introducing me to perform at the White House and playing at the Grammys. So it has really a lot for everybody, and all kinds of different styles are represented.
Let me ask you one final brief question. And that is about your students and the classes. I know you have master classes that people can just sit in on, and I know also that every year you have a concert where the students get to perform, and sometimes there'll be four or five of them up there at the same time.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about your students this year and what process they're going through with the teaching and the master classes, et cetera?
We have a terrific group of guitar students this summer, and Bak Yum Byun, who has been my student at Juilliard and has just graduated, she's off to get her PhD soon. She's going to be my fellowship teaching assistant, so she assists me with a lot of the guitar chamber music works. The students will have their own concert the last Thursday of the festival. Mm-hmm. It'll be at 6 o'clock on campus, and you can see that listed in the calendar. Mm-hmm. And they do everything from solos, duets, trios, quartets, the whole group together. It's really pretty exciting.
A guitar nonet. You got to see that, everybody.
And there's going to be an Anderson Ranch concert. You can check the exact date of that by going online as well. That's in the calendar. And then my master classes, there are 9 of them. They're 3-hour classes. You're welcome to drop in at any time to any of them. They're free and open to the public. Those are listed if you just go to either my website and the tour page and click on the Aspen link. You'll find all the classes listed, or you can just look each day in the calendar. They're all from 12 to 3 on campus.
Sharon Isbin, thank you so much for coming in with your guitar, I noticed, and taking a little time to talk to us here at Aspen Public Radio.
It's my pleasure. It's always wonderful to see you, Chris.
If you've just joined us, this is Festival Showcase, and we've been talking with guitarist Sharon Isbin about her upcoming performance at Harris Hall with her former guitar student and current colleague, Colin Davin, as well as the Pacifica Quartet. It's not too late to go to this evening's 5 p.m. concert at the Aspen District Theater in the elementary school. The program, Wind, Water, Earth, and Fire in Harmony with Nature, produced by the Aspen Jewish Congregation with cantors from all over the country, is organized by cantor Roland Simmons right here in Aspen, who also burst into song during our interview. Well, Roland, this is the third year that I've invited you to come in and talk a little bit about a program at the Aspen Jewish Congregation, a musical program. And each year the theme is very interesting and it draws me back in again. And I think this is your sixth year running this musical program. Tell us a little bit about how this first got started.
I started this concert 6 years ago, soon after we had moved here. And it was really inspired by a teacher of mine, Debbie Friedman, who was really a pioneer in Jewish music, combining the folk genre with Jewish texts, really for the first time, and changed Judaism. So many people have been inspired by her. And she passed away in 2011, in January. So it was just about 6 months after we'd gotten here. I was privileged to be at Hebrew Union College in Cantorial School with Debbie and studied with her, and also sat next to her as she took all of our classes there. And one thing that really moved me about her was her appreciation for Jewish music beyond just the folk genre, to want to know about every aspect of Jewish music and the breadth that it encompasses. So that first year of our concert was really a tribute to her in showing that breadth.
And that would include Broadway tunes and popular songs, jazz tunes that had been written by Jewish composers.
Yeah, I think that it's a really interesting question, what is Jewish music? Because there are so many answers. It could be something by a Jewish composer. It could be a piece of a prayer. It could be a Hebrew text. But I think there's also a way to look at certain pieces of music that maybe wouldn't typically be categorized as Jewish and see them through a Jewish lens or a spiritual lens.
And this year, your theme is called Wind, Water, Earth, and Fire. I guess the four elements are being referred to here. It just at first glance, it looks like this tremendous celebration of nature, which seems absolutely perfect for Aspen.
Yeah, I felt that it was an important theme that we really haven't touched on yet in our 6 years. And looking at how Judaism views nature and how we all feel such a connection to nature, certainly in this valley.
So tell us a little bit about composers and what some of the pieces are.
So I'll start with the Jewish texts. One piece that I've included that I will be singing is called Tal, which means dew, and it's a prayer for when the seasons change. We sing this prayer right around Passover time. It's a switch from the rains that have been falling through the winter. Now, of course, this is really based on weather in Israel.
Sure.
More than here, we should change the prayer to snow, and we're in Aspen, of course. But in Israel, it's rain. So it was rain from the fall, and then in the springtime, we switch to dew. And it's this really gorgeous prayer.
Ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha
it's so beautiful, and the sound of the Hebrew language is also very evocative, even without my knowing the exact words. It brought forth a question for me about the traditional Jewish view of our relationship to nature. Could you say just a few words about your understanding of our relationship to nature as it appears in that passage in Genesis?
I think that throughout our Jewish story, throughout our Torah in Genesis and beyond, so much of our story happens in nature. There's so much beautiful imagery expressed in the Torah. And of course, Genesis and the creation story does give this dominion to man over nature.
Mm-hmm.
I actually wanted to mention another piece on the program because I was so moved. There's a piece called Bereshit by an Israeli composer, Sasha Argov. And the words are actually by Chaim Hafer. It is almost humorous in a very dark way. It tells the story of creation in a creative telling. And then when it gets to man, it says, "Man tamed every beast, and man plowed the land, and man invented the wheel, and man navigated boats on waves, and man restrained the steam, and man flew upwards like a bird, and man conquered planets high above, and man created the atomic bomb." So then the text of creation begins again after that very dark telling.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, man is not created.
Oh, my.
God realizes there was a mistake. Man didn't do a good job. Man didn't respect this beautiful creation. And now everything will be better without man. So it's a pretty intense.
I've noticed this, that you put in songs that really get people thinking. And then there's also, as we said before at the beginning, that there's a lot of popular music that's in there. So it seems to me as though the invitation really goes to Jews, Gentiles, anybody who might be interested in this subject and how it's being treated by one group of people, at least.
I think with the theme of nature, it's easy to be cliche. And I was really wanting to challenge people. I like to challenge people with the songs I pick. And there are two main points that really came to light for me. One, when we think of Judaism or when we think of religion, we often think of being in a building, being in a church, being in a temple, and that's where the prayer happens, and that's where the, quote, organized religion happens. And I think that actually turns a lot of people off. When so much of our story, like I said, really happened outside. And why shouldn't we be outside and connecting with nature and have that be part of who we are as Jews or as Christians? Or so I like to just challenge that notion that organized religion has to be in a building. And I think here in Aspen, especially at the Aspen Jewish Congregation, we go all over the place to really feel connected to our spirituality and our Judaism.
This is Festival Showcase, and we've been talking with cantor Roland Simmons of Aspen, who is putting on and producing a performance this evening at 5 p.m., so get ready to head right out to the Aspen District Theater if this sounds interesting to you. It's at the elementary school there. The program, Wind, Water, Earth, and Fire, in Harmony with Nature, is produced by the Aspen Jewish Congregation, with cantors from all over the country, and of course, cantor Roland Simmons herself. This has been Festival Showcase, a weekly interview program that explores the music and the artists behind the 2016 season of the Aspen Music Festival in School and previews upcoming performances. This program comes to you from Aspen Public Radio, the official voice of the Aspen Music Festival in School, and can be heard online at aspenpublicradio.org. Funding for Festival Showcase is provided by the Barnard Fane Foundation. Please join me Tuesdays at 3:30 or the rebroadcast Saturdays at 3 for more interviews. My name is Chris Moore. Thanks for listening.